Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. We are coming up on 50 episodes. Did you know that only about 10% of podcasts make it this far? And there's like millions of podcasts out there. It is super, super exciting for us. I know this milestone would not be just ahead of us without the unending support from my team at Beyond Booksmart, Justice Abbott and Sean Potts. I'm also eternally grateful to our CEO, Michael Dellman, for supporting me and believing in the mission of the podcast. I am also so grateful to all my fellow coaches who have contributed their voices, their tips, their ideas, and their thoughtful insight to my research on the different topics that we cover and our coach Q&A episodes. And I also want to give a huge shout out to my colleagues at BrainTrax, our school division, WorkSmart, our adult coaching division, and to our outreach coordinators for helping share the podcast and using Focus Forward episodes to help educate their clients. And of course, a million billion thanks to you, my Focus Forward listeners. Oh, I just love you. Thank you so much for listening and sharing and reaching out to say hi. And if you haven't ever reached out, but you want to say hi, you can email me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com or just reply to the subscriber email. You can also leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. That's always helpful. Thank you. So today's episode is a conversation I had with Dr. Deborah Korn, a licensed clinical psychologist with over 30 years of experience using EMDR therapy. EM what, you might say? If you haven't heard of EMDR before, you are in for a treat today. This therapy is pretty mind-blowing. Actually, it's mind-rewiring. If you've ever done EMDR, you may agree with me when I say it's almost like magic. Debbie and I talked about this special form of memory-focused psychotherapy. You'll learn what it is, how it works, and who might be a good candidate for it. She shared some inspiring and heartwarming stories about people whose lives have been changed for the better or maybe even saved by EMDR therapy. I don't want to share too much in my intro because Debbie is so good. So let's just get on with the show. Hi, Debbie. Thanks so much for joining me on Focus Forward today.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. This topic, EMDR, is something that I've always been really interested in after having done some EMDR therapy myself. I'm super excited to learn more today. So thanks so much for sharing all your knowledge with us. Could you just introduce yourself and share a little bit about your background and why I'm talking to you?
Sure. So I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and I maintain a private practice in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I'm also on the adjunct training faculty at Bessel van der Kolk's Trauma Research Foundation in Boston. I was trained in EMDR, which we'll be talking about shortly, by Francine Shapiro, who was the developer of EMDR in 1991 and 92, and I've been on the faculty of the EMDR Institute, Dr. Shapiro's Institute, for the past 30 plus years. I've authored, I've co-authored many articles and chapters focused on EMDR therapy, including comprehensive reviews of EMDR applications with complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm an approved consultant with regard to EMDR. I'm on the editorial board of the Journal of EMDR Practice and Research. And in addition to doing therapy, I teach and I consult across the US and internationally on EMDR and on complex traumatic stress disorders. And in 2021, I released a book called Every Memory Deserves Respect about trauma and recovery in EMDR therapy. And I co-wrote this book with Michael Baldwin, who is a trauma survivor and an EMDR client, not my own client, but a colleague's client. Mm-hmm. Very, very proud of that book, which was written for the layperson an introduction to EMDR therapy and trauma-informed therapy.
So it sounds like we can trust what you have to say about EMDR. You have a lot of experience. So thank you for sharing everything with us. So mm-hmm. for people who don't know, what is EMDR and what do those letters stand for?
Yes. So, EMDR is a memory-focused psychotherapy that helps people deal with the impact and the legacy of trauma and adverse experiences in their lives. And we can talk some more about that later, the fact that it's not just for big T traumas, but it's also for everyday traumas, everyday adverse experiences that have some kind of lasting impact on the individual. Now, the name, it's a mouthful. Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing.
Which is why we call it EMDR
Yes,
instead.
exactly. Desensitization refers to the reduction of distress or fear or anxiety. Reprocessing refers to the reevaluation or the restructuring of thoughts and negative beliefs, and basically the transformation of one's sense of self relative to past traumatic experiences. For example, moving from feeling like I'm in danger or I'm at risk, I'm unsafe, or I'm powerless, moving from that to feeling, believing, no, I'm safe now, it's over, I'm okay, I have choices, I'm a good person rather than being stuck in, I'm a failure. It's really about that transformation from old belief, old experience within the body to feeling freer and more present in the present. That's the reprocessing part. And then the eye movement part, or the eye movement aspect of the name. So Francine Shapiro, the developer of EMDR, accidentally discovered back in the late 80s that purposely moving your eyes horizontally back and forth while focusing on a traumatic memory leads to a reduction in the vividness and the emotional intensity of the memory. And she developed an effective protocol treating post-traumatic stress disorder and other trauma-related problems using this bilateral stimulation, these back and forth eye movements, the kind of eye movements you would imagine with REM sleep, right? Just lateral back and forth eye movements. And she published her first research study on this approach back in 1989, working with rape survivors and combat veterans. So hence the name eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And EMDR is basically based on the idea that psychological problems are related to a failure to adequately process traumatic experiences, traumatic memories. So these unprocessed traumatic memories, frozen or locked in our nervous system, continue to affect how we perceive things, decisions we make, reactions we have, the beliefs we hold about ourselves and others. And then present-day triggers come along. Triggers are anything in our environment, in our world that somehow relate to experiences that we've had previously that stir up memories. So these present-day triggers activate these unprocessed traumatic memories, leading to symptoms that cause some kind of ongoing distress or create difficulties or obstacles in one way or the other. And in EMDR therapy, we help clients access and activate their unprocessed traumatic memories with a set of very focused questions. And then we jumpstart the brain's information processing system using the eye movements, using bilateral stimulation. And with EMDR reprocessing, a client's distress eventually decreases, and relevant information, relative adaptive information, helpful information located in other parts of the brain gets integrated. So, as I was saying, beliefs like it's over, I'm safe now, I was only a little kid doing the best that I could, it wasn't actually my fault, I'm in control now, I have choices. As we move the past into the past more fully, when we move it out of this place where it's kicking up and causing distress and making it very difficult to respond from your best self in the present, folks are able to move to this place naturally. They don't have to work hard at it and naturally move to a place where they see the world differently, they see themselves differently. So with EMDR, there are shifts in thoughts and feelings and behaviors and physical sensations And the healing really involves spontaneous movement toward more positive thinking, more manageable feelings, more self-compassion, and a significant reduction in the distress that folks experience in their bodies at a somatic level. And the theory behind EMDR argues that the mind can heal from psychological trauma in the same way that the body heals from physical trauma, right? We're all physiologically geared toward the achievement of optimal health, right? The mind knows how to move toward healing and health, but various things get in the way. People get stuck. And EMDR is about removing those blocks and facilitating kind of the mind's information processing system that knows what to do once it gets jump started and focused.
Yeah, I love hearing it all explained like that because I have done EMDR therapy, and so it's really cool to be like, yep, and it's so interesting to kind of hear like the therapist's explanation of it, and then compare it to my own experience and my own like I remember after I went through the treatment, I remember trying to conjure up the same reaction just to test it out, and I couldn't.
Yes,
It was
exactly.
weird. It was
Yes.
so weird.
Right. So that's the desensitization part of it, right? Once we have processed through and brought the distress down, it's actually very hard to return to it and re-establish, re-access that distress because it's gone. It's
It's
been
gone.
transformed.
Yeah, so I tested it out this morning, actually, but when I was just kind of thinking about our conversation, and so I sat there, and I brought back the target memory that my therapist asked me to use. I know I want to talk. I want you to explain to our listeners how what an EMDR session would look like, so that people understand what I'm saying when I say target memory. But I brought that back just to test it out, and I could just think about it. I could just remember it, and I didn't have any kind of reaction to it. And that was it was like 13 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah,
So it's held long-term
it
results.
stuck. Yeah, it's
Yes. You
really
would be a
cool.
poster child for EMDR because that is what we hear people say all the time. Like, I'm trying to pull it up. I'm trying to find that distress, and I just don't feel it. It's not that the memory is gone,
Yes. Oh,
right? You can
yeah.
still remember. It's that the
Vividly.
distress, the suffering, the
Yes.
negative beliefs, the
Yes.
body sensations are
Yes.
gone,
Yeah.
that the mind has processed it through.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it feels like magic. I know it's not magic. So, can you kind of explain what an EMDR session might look like, and the kind of the I know there's a some certain number of steps that you walk people through
Protocol, yeah.
to get them from this place of really struggling to a place of where they can think
Yeah, let
about
me
it
see if
without
I can give a
dying.
little context, the overall big
Yeah.
picture, and then kind of what the
Great.
targeting of a memory might be like. So, early sessions involve thorough history taking, right? Coming up with a treatment plan, like what are we going to be working on? What pace are we going to work at? How, you know, what kind of preparation do we need to do before we really work very collaboratively with clients. We want to make sure that we establish safety and trust in the therapeutic relationship before we go into something that's very, very difficult. For some clients, we work on resourcing or skill building before we move into trauma-focused work. And, you know, most people don't show up saying, I want to work on my traumatic memories from age 5 through age 12, right? Most people walk through our doors and they say, I'm miserable. I'm having trouble coping. I'm having marital problems. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I have PTSD symptoms. You know, kids come in because they're having trouble in school. They're getting in trouble. You know, there's fighting at home. Most people don't come in pointing to what may be frozen or locked in their nervous system from the past. So we often begin with a client's current distress. When's the last time you felt that anxiety? When's the last time you felt that panic? When's the last time you had a nightmare? And we ask them to float back from that experience. So remember what happened yesterday when your boss called you into his office. Let those feelings come up, let the words come up, let the experience come up in your body, and just close your eyes and let your mind float back, right? Float back to when you first experienced something like this, or a time, the worst time you experienced something like this. We're looking for the root of the distress, right? We're searching for relevant memories to target. Once we find a target memory, which is a memory that has charge to it, that has distress to it, and seems to be relevant to what the person is talking about in the present, both the therapist and the client can see, like, oh, this is familiar. This is a familiar reaction, a familiar feeling or belief. So once we've found that target memory, we activate the memory through a series of questions. Series of questions meaning, what picture represents the worst part of that memory? What's the negative belief about yourself that comes up with that memory, right? I'm in danger. I'm not good enough. I'm stupid. What are the emotions that come up with this? How distressing does it feel on a scale of 0 to 10? We get a baseline measure so we know where we're starting. Where do you feel that distress in your body? All of those questions are geared to activate, to access and activate the memory in the nervous system before we bring in the bilateral stimulation to jumpstart the processing. So we ask this series of questions to activate, and then we introduce a 30 to 60 second set of eye movements or bilateral back and forth stimulation to jumpstart and support the brain's stalled information processing system. And over the years, we've discovered that other forms of what we call bilateral stimulation are also effective in reducing distress. So we might have clients track our fingers with their eyes as the fingers move back and forth, or we might have them track a light that moves back and forth, or we might have them listen to alternating tones through headphones, or we might tap back and forth on their hands as they rest their hands in their lap. And by the way, during the pandemic, we discovered that EMDR can be done successfully virtually online. And we have all kinds of tech that allows us to have lights that go back on the screen
That's
and
awesome.
has people hook up with headphones over Zoom, over
Cool.
virtual platforms. So with every set of bilateral stimulation, the client is asked to simply notice what changes or emerges and to report, right? So to notice images, thoughts, feelings, sensations, impulses, insights, anything at all that emerges. And it's going to be different for every person, right? We encourage folks to just be a passenger on a train, just watching the scenery go by. Always staying connected to the present moment, just witnessing. Like, that's the language we use. Just be a witness, just be an observer, right? This is not about reliving. This is about witnessing, right? And eventually a little bit of redoing mentally of the way things are held in mind. And we say to clients over and over, it's old stuff. Just, it's old stuff. Stay here with me. Keep your feet on the floor. Listen to my voice. This is old stuff. And we stress the importance of what we call dual attention, which is always staying connected to the present as we dip into the past. So after every set of bilateral stimulation of eye movements, we ask, what do you get now? What do you notice? What's changing? People report. We remind people there's no supposedes, there's no shoulds. Whatever comes up, just let it come up and report on it. And different things happen. As I said, clients remember, they process fear, they process grief, they process anger, they process guilt and shame. They report on that coming up. We work to keep the processing body focused at all times. Where do you feel that? Just notice. I think of EMDR as a body-based therapy. because we're really tracking the body more than anything else. And in the course of the processing, a client might imagine saying or doing what they never got to previously say or do, expressing their rage, running when they were in a situation where they were trapped at the time, fighting back with superhuman strength. I was just working with somebody last week who was working on some childhood bullying. And in his processing, he imagined that he grew bigger and bigger and
nice.
Stronger and stronger and just gave it to this kid, you know, who was picking on him for, who had been picking on him for years. So, you know, a client might also spontaneously see their younger self. Whether, you know, whether we're working with a child in therapy, you know, a 10-year-old that is, who's looking at their 5-year-old self, or whether I'm working with somebody in their 70s who's working with their 40-year-old self or their 5-year-old self,
yeah,
right? But they yeah. often will see their younger self, and often compassion, often care in some way, care that maybe was never delivered at the time, was not available in the situation or in the family that they were in. And maybe the last thing I'll say is that comprehensive treatment, you know, treatment overall, is focused on past, present, and future. So we begin by identifying the pivotal life experiences, the adverse experiences that seem to still be kicking around in the nervous system, causing distress, holding the person back. We work on that. But then we work on any present triggers that are still causing difficulties, and we desensitize, we reprocess those triggers, we neutralize those triggers. And then ultimately, we help the person to imagine the future, to imagine who they want to be, what they want to be doing, to imagine coping differently with the things that were previously difficult. And so it's not just working on these old memories. It's really a comprehensive psychotherapy where, you know, once we've cleared out the past experiences, we're helping folks to be their very, very best in the present and into the future, and to tackle things, to set goals that they've never been able to even imagine tackling before.
Wow, I love that. Great, thank you. So you mentioned kids. So any age person can do EMDR?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, EMDR is being used with all ages. I was just talking with one of my colleagues a couple weeks ago who works exclusively with kids, and she was telling me about an EMDR session with a 3-year-old who's, and I won't go into any detail here, but whose parents were killed in a car accident. And this child came into the therapy completely dysregulated, and through the integration of EMDR bilateral stimulation with a form of play therapy, within a few sessions, this little girl was sleeping through the night again, was starting to play with her peers again, where she had been very, very shut down, non-communicative. So just a couple of sessions with a 3-year-old, right?
That's wonderful.
Yes. So it's used with all age kids, with adolescents, with adults, with seniors. My oldest client is 95.
Cool. Right?
And our work began working on childhood memories that were still haunting her. She had never her entire life worked on some childhood abuse experiences. And later in our work, after her husband passed away, we worked on processing the death of her husband and starting to see herself differently going forward in life. And now in her 90s, we're working on the trauma of facing certain illnesses that are, you know, but quite frightening for her. So we've covered quite a lifespan together. But the answer is yes, you know, across the lifespan, all ages.
I was talking with someone recently who said they felt like they were just stuck as they were, and that's just how they are, and they won't ever be able to change how they react to the world. And I said, oh, I think you actually could. Yeah.
I mean, I think that is where people enter therapy. You
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
more often than not, folks come in feeling it's me, there's something wrong
Yeah.
with me, and how can I change who I am? And, you know, I say to people, this is not about who you are. This is about what has happened to you
Yeah.
and how that is being held within your body. And we can do something about that. We can
Yeah.
really, really do something to help alleviate that stuckness.
So that makes me think about the different kinds of trauma that people experience and how you mentioned it's either big T trauma or little T trauma. Like, can you maybe explain a little bit about how therapy can help someone who hasn't necessarily had like a massive major trauma, but maybe these tiny little things that have happened over the course of their life?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to say two things about trauma in general. That when we think about trauma, it's important to say that trauma is both about commission and omission. Commission is what was committed against you, right? What happened to you, an assault, emotional, physical, sexual abuse, a car accident, a traumatic loss, a life-threatening illness. Those are things that happen to you. But trauma is also about omission. It's about what didn't happen, what was supposed to happen, but what didn't happen. When somebody was not properly protected or listened to or cared for or valued, experiences of neglect or deprivation or abandonment or alienation. And we talk about commission and omission, and we talk about big T and little T. And as you said, the big T are the obvious shock traumas, you know, the traumas that get a lot of attention in the media, the where someone's deeply threatened in the moment, their survival is threatened. But when we talk about little T or small T traumas, we're often talking about what we call developmental trauma. So the experience of failures, the experience of feeling different, you know, growing up as a neurodivergent human being and feeling like I'm different, or having the sense of feeling powerless or stuck or ashamed because you can't keep up in some way, or you look different, or you sound different, or you feel different than other people. And depending on how you're held in that space, you know, whether there's acceptance for who you are, whether other people can see you and hear and validate, whether you're alone versus in community around that, whether you're criticized, you know, lots and lots of well-meaning parents, who maybe struggle with their own mental health issues or who struggle with their own attentional issues. You know, who are consistently getting impatient or can get triggered into being quite critical, that can take a toll over time. And so, folks don't come through the door just reporting these big T traumas. As we start to explore for where do these feelings originate? When did you start feeling this way? When did you start thinking this way about yourself? We often just go back to, you know, I used to wind up in the principal's office all the time, or I had this fifth grade teacher who, no matter how hard I worked to please her, always was disappointed, always seemed to be disappointed in me, you know, or people go back to losses in their life, the loss of a pet, the loss of, you know, friends because of moving, multiple moves, deaths that occurred at a young age, that where there was so much distress within the family or within the community, they were not properly attended to, they were not properly held, things were not explained well. And so, you know, something didn't get processed through at that time and continues to then get triggered by other losses later in life. And so as somebody grows up, either they find themselves that they are consistently being triggered into high levels of distress, or they've had so much of that over a lifetime, they've really shut their emotional world down. They've pushed feelings away and they're going through life much more constricted, much more cut off. So sometimes in our work, we're needing to help people access feeling when they've been quite cut off. Sometimes we're needing to help people where there's way too much feeling, depending on how they've adapted to these experiences in their lives. People show up in different places. And in EMDR therapy, we meet the individual where they are and we start there. But by the end of the work, hopefully they are much more regulated. They're living in a world where they're connected to their body, they're embodied, they're connected to their emotional world, they're connected to self, in a way that feels manageable, that feels regulated, that feels so much more peaceful than being very shut down and on guard and afraid of getting triggered or overwhelmed, overstimulated, and vulnerable, that at any moment it's going to be too much.
And then this is another thing that I'm just personally interested in. What about
Yeah.
chronic pain? Because I imagine, I know in my experience, like my husband has had chronic pain throughout his life. And even though he's in remission right now, he said he still feels like he views the world as if he is still in pain, even though
Yes.
he's not feeling it.
Yeah.
And so is that something that people can work on as well? Because I
It's a
know there's a
great
lot of people
question.
out there with chronic pain.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's not an obvious question, right? To ask about a trauma-informed or memory-focused psychotherapy. But we deal with chronic pain in EMDR therapy all the time. And in fact, there's very solid research to support work with chronic pain. And when I'm working with somebody that has a history of chronic pain, we have a number of different targets. If the chronic pain is related to an actual event, like a car accident or a sports injury, or an illness, we go back and we target those events, those experiences which have not been fully processed through. And sometimes simply by doing that, the pain clears.
Whoa.
Yes, sometimes.
Ooh, I just got the chills.
We also sometimes just target the pain itself. So if somebody is carrying pain in their shoulder or pain or, has abdominal pain, we target the pain itself. And we have protocols that really are all about bringing down the level of pain. Sometimes that in and of itself can be very effective. And then we also target the belief system that's come to be associated with being a pain sufferer. So beliefs like, I have no control, I'm damaged goods, I'll never be pain-free, it's my fault, I should be able to do better than this. So pain sufferers, really walk around with a lot of powerlessness and a sense of feeling doomed and a sense of, the world isn't safe. At any moment, I could get triggered, turning the wrong way, right? Being in a situation that's really stressful. And so we're working at all of those levels. We're working with those beliefs and we're working to clear out that felt sense of I'm not safe, working toward the goal of it's over, it's in the past, my body can heal, and getting to a place where the felt experience is different.
Can you share a couple stories with me or cases with me about what you've seen and the changes that have happened for people?
Absolutely. Let's see. One case that immediately comes to mind is a doctor, an inpatient hospital doc that I saw during the pandemic. He was working with COVID patients at the height of the pandemic. And had always been high functioning, oldest son, did great his whole life, until he hit a point during the pandemic where he started to get very depressed. He started having trouble going to work, like it was hard to get up in the morning. He was calling in sick. He was starting to have all kinds of marital difficulties, like very, very irritable. And at the very end, he started to drink to try to dampen feelings. And his wife really pushed him to come in for treatment. He didn't know about EMDR, but I very early on in our work together told him that I thought he was a perfect EMDR candidate. And there was one very, very interesting part of his presentation, which was at home when he was getting triggered, when he was finding himself very, very irritable in the face of day-to-day life. He started throwing things. Like he'd get really angry and just not at people, but he'd throw things. And that was like the last straw for his wife. She's like, okay, you need to see someone. And so we started to explore what brought him into treatment. He was clearly depressed. He clearly was walking around with a lot of anxiety that he was trying to dampen with drinking. And he had full-blown PTSD related to traumatic losses of patients in the hospital. But we started to explore the throwing of things, the impulse to throw things. Sure enough, he had a history of childhood trauma as well. His father was very violent. And his father was violent toward his mother, and he witnessed a lot of domestic violence. And he had memories of when he was young, his father would be violent with his mother, and he would freeze. He'd be so terrified. He'd freeze. He'd hide behind furniture and peek out and just throw things at his father to try to get him to stop.
Whoa.
So, in the face of feeling really overwhelmed, really powerless and almost frozen in terror, he would throw things.
Wow.
So we began our work working on these traumatic losses and the powerlessness he felt in the hospital system where they didn't have enough supplies, they didn't have enough man and woman power. We worked on all of that. His PTSD symptoms very quickly subsided. He put the alcohol aside. He had taken off work to do. He took a leave for a couple of weeks. We were able to get him back to work. And then we started to work on the childhood trauma. And he came to understand things about himself that he had never understood before, about how he adapted to growing up in that environment, how he had to be perfect, how he had to excel at everything. But he always felt not good enough. He always felt like at any moment he could lose it all, because that was the feeling in childhood where things were so unpredictable. So we worked together for several months, and then he was better. He was not depressed anymore. He did not have PTSD anymore. He had an understanding and an appreciation of where he had been in his life that led him to become a doctor. He started, he found kind of the meaningfulness in his work again, which he'd cut off from because of the overwhelm. So that's one
Amazing.
story
Making me
about
cry.
you know what? I cried plenty with
I'm
him. Like,
sure.
we were all living through the pandemic together, and their losses were losses that affected us all. But his story is really a story of triumph and deep healing,
And then
deep
he
healing.
was able to continue being a doctor and helping people now for the rest of
And
his
he
life.
started referring all of his doctor colleagues for
Yeah,
EMDR therapy
good.
because and
New.
nurses, doctors, nurses, techs. You know, I was
Everybody.
started getting a call from him like every other week with, you know, could you find a therapist
Oh, that's
for?
wonderful. Yeah.
So that's one story. And the other story, I thought maybe I'd share a story of I worked with a adolescent boy, 16 years old, who was having a lot of problems within his family. He was very kind of oppositional, angry, picking fights with his parents, had gotten thrown out of school a couple, you know, suspended from school a couple times because of picking fights. And, you know, history of ADHD, history of learning differences, bullied as a younger kid. He was very, very interested in EMDR. He had heard about EMDR
Cool.
from a friend of his, who had an EMDR therapist. And we had a whole range of targets from the very beginning. He was able to identify what he called traumas from when he was little, which was, you know, getting into trouble a lot because of his ADHD, very hyperactive, very, you know, was constantly touching other kids and pushing and, you know, was always looking for tactile stimulation. And then, you know, would get in trouble and would feel deep shame. So we quickly got to kind of the shame at the heart of his situation. And the way he learned to deal with shame was by being bigger and louder and tougher than everyone around him. As we worked through some of these earlier childhood experiences, and he started to develop a sense of compassion for his younger little kiddo, he was able to do this beautiful work where he was able to kind of talk to his younger self and say, hey, you know, you're okay. And we worked on, you know, the many episodes in the principal's office. We worked on the suspensions. We started to help him find clarity about the triggers in his environment. And we were then able to help him avoid triggers where that was possible, but also desensitize certain triggers so that he could kind of observe and kind of go, oh, that's a trigger, but not get hijacked into being reactive, or needing to flee or needing to push away. And we start by the end of the work together, we started to work on a vision of who he, you know, what his gifts were, what he wanted to be doing in the world. And we worked on that future part of the work. And he is in college now, and he's also doing a lot of social justice activism work. He's kind of used his
How cool.
energy and his sense of fight that he has always felt, but it used to be applied in the wrong places. He's actually doing some really neat things in terms of social justice
How
now.
cool.
And
Good for him.
you know, he would say that EMDR really, really changed his life. And his both his parents wound up getting into EMDR therapy as well,
Oh,
because
good.
what they realized is, they each had their own trauma, their own childhood trauma that was getting stirred up by a kiddo who was pushing their buttons. So, as the parents have done their own work, the family has come together in a new
That's
way
wonderful.
that is, you know, that's really hopeful.
Oh, thank you for sharing those. So, is there anything else that you want to share about EMDR itself?
You know, I found that people may be reluctant to enter therapy where they're going to focus on their traumatic life experiences that can be daunting. And often they think too that they need to know what those experiences are before they come into therapy. So about that, I wanted to say you absolutely do not need to know what your depression or your anxiety or your pain is about before coming into therapy. That's going to be a collaborative process of exploration and identifying over the course of time what's relevant. And second of all, EMDR can sound a little bit mechanical when I'm giving a short description of it. You come, you plop down, and you follow somebody's fingers. It is not a mechanical process. It's a deeply intimate, relational process. You are not alone with somebody just doing something to you. You are working with a therapist who's really traveling with you step by step, helping, serving as a guide, serving as a partner. And I say to people all the time, don't wait. You don't want to wait until you feel ready. It's okay to show up, bring your whole hot mess with you. It's the job of an EMDR therapist to help you figure out where to begin and how to create a plan that will help you heal.
Yeah, that was my experience when I went to that therapist. I didn't even know he did EMDR and I didn't even know what it was. And so when I was explaining why I was having a lot of anxiety, why I thought I was having a lot of anxiety, he asked me, would you like to do this? And I was like, sure, I'm game for anything. I'll try it. If he had said first, you're going to have to go back to the most painful part of that whole experience, I would have been like, hell no, get me out of here. But I have to say, going back to that moment was really hard, but I felt so safe doing it.
We're avoidant beings. Human
Yeah, of
beings are
course.
avoidant. We don't go toward pain. We push away in every way we can in order to keep functioning, in order to put one foot in front of the other. So the challenge is great in entering therapy to say, yes, we have to go toward, but you don't have to do it alone. You're going to do it, when you're ready with the help of another person. And the potential for healing is tremendous.
It really is. It really is. Ooh, I basically had chills this entire conversation.
I think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's great. It's so great. So you said, don't wait. So if someone is listening and considering like saying like, hey, this sounds like something that could really help me, which I'm starting to conclude that EMDR could help anybody.
Well, it was first developed as a treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder and clear trauma-related symptoms. But over the 35 years that EMDR has been around, we are now using EMDR across all diagnoses. It's a transdiagnostic intervention. As I said, anxiety, depression, phobias, ADHD, learning differences. We use it in couples therapy. We use it in family therapy. We use it immediately after traumatic events, after a school shooting, after a community violence. We use it in groups of people. We use it with individuals. We use it with eating disorders. We're using it with psychotic patients, with folks with bipolar disorder. We the you know places where we used to question, would it be safe? Is it possible? Because everyone has had experiences, has had life experiences. We're not going to cure schizophrenia with EMDR, but somebody that has a schizophrenic diagnosis or has had bipolar or, has had to deal with OCD their entire life. They've had so many experiences of shame or feeling different or wondering if they're going to ever get better. So we work on those experiences. And as we do, people discover they can feel so much better.
Oh, that's so wonderful. So how can people find a therapist and find someone that can help them?
I would first and foremost refer them to the EMDR International Association. It's called EMDRIA, EMDRIA.org. And there's a find a therapist directory. And you can look up, based on where you live or what you're looking for, what your insurance is, all of that. That's a really good place to start. EMDR has different designations. You can be an EMDRIA approved consultant. That's the highest level of training. Those are the folks that are consulting to other therapists and helping with the development for other therapists. So it's great if you want to start by contacting a consultant because they typically know who's in the area. They can make recommendations. But if you can't, find a somebody who's a consultant that's available, looking for somebody who's EMDRIA certified, that's the next level of one down credentialing. But even folks who haven't been certified, if they've done a complete training in EMDR, if they have experience over years, not everyone decides to get certified. It's a credential. You just want to ask about experience and expertise. And in my book, which we can talk about before we wrap up, there's a whole chapter, I think it's chapter 7, on how to look for an EMDR therapist. What are the questions you should ask yourself and then ask an EMDR therapist? I'd say EMDRIA is probably the best place to start and take a look at that chapter in my book. And we are training lots and lots and lots of therapists during the pandemic. Many, many, many therapists recognized how important it is to get trained in EMDR to add that to their toolbox, as we were all experiencing trauma. And people were experiencing tremendous loss and difficulty. So, we're working hard to train, to solidly train EMDR therapists. So
That's great.
there's availability out there.
So let's talk about your book because it's pretty fantastic. So how did you get connected with your co-author Michael, and then just kind of maybe give a little tour of it so people can know what's inside.
Michael Baldwin, as I said, is not a therapist. He's a childhood abuse survivor. He's been a client of EMDR with one of my colleagues in Connecticut. And Michael had spent a lifetime in distress, having PTSD symptoms, difficulties with addictions, avoidant, terrified of intimacy with a woman, going through life kind of, as he would say, with a fake persona, just play acting, pretending very, very successful on the outside, but internally, full of self-doubt, full of fear, phobias, and had pursued therapy repeatedly over the years with no reduction in distress. Hours and hours and hours of therapy over his lifetime. And he finally landed with Dr. Jeffrey Magnavita, who is an EMDR therapist, among other things, very solid, solid experienced therapist. And Michael spent 2 years in therapy. And he will say from the very first EMDR session started to feel relief, started to feel hope, started to understand for the first time in his life that it wasn't about who he was, but it was about what had happened to him and what didn't happen to him, the neglect in his childhood. And his story is fascinating because he came from privilege. It came from a well-to-do family that looked picture perfect on the outside. But in fact, there was abuse in his life. There was bullying. There were you had all kinds of learning difficulties. He as a kid, he couldn't read at all. He couldn't tune in to the world around him. He'd look at other kids who knew about music and knew about sports, and he was kind of living in this detached, foggy place because of the overwhelm and the trauma in his life. Anyway, Michael had this remarkably successful course of treatment with EMDR and had an idea for a book. He wanted to tell others about EMDR. He didn't want others to suffer. And the idea for his book was integrating photographs, images, what he calls billboards, photographs that have a little bit of, a photo on one side, a little bit of text on the other side, with narrative, with information about EMDR. And his vision was that it would be written in two voices: the voice of an EMDR expert, a therapist, and his voice, the voice of a survivor, an EMDR client. And so his therapist, who's a colleague of mine, suggested that he reach out, and he approached me with this idea. And I got very, very excited about it because it sounded like a book that my clients would actually read. It sounded like a book that would reach out to the public in a way that hadn't been done previously. There's been plenty of EMDR books out there that the public, the average person, could pick up, but this book, is really designed to be accessible. It is designed for a neurodivergent population. It's really user-friendly, and it's, since it's written in both of our voices, you've got all of the information you might want about research and mechanisms of action. Why does EMDR work? And stories about actual cases, and then you've got this first-person account of what it means to grow up with trauma, to live with trauma through a lifetime, and then to heal with EMDR therapy. So we got to work on this book, and our hope in writing the book is that it would not just be for big T trauma survivors, but it would reach out to anyone who has struggled in any way. And it would be a book that primary care doctors would think about recommending to their clients, that chiropractors would recommend to their clients, that probation officers would offer their clients. And that is starting to happen. This past September, Michael and I spoke to a group of 800 lawyers and judges and case managers who work within the foster care system,
Oh, how wonderful.
teaching them about trauma-informed treatment, teaching them about EMDR. I'm talking with you today, hopefully reaching out to parents and those who've struggled with learning issues and attentional issues. And so it's been really an incredible experience creating this book and offering it to the public. And the book basically provides education about trauma. What is trauma? We talk about big T, little T trauma. How does trauma affect the brain? We talk about EMDR, what EMDR is, what it isn't, the myths about EMDR. We address the fears that people might have, the hesitancies that people might have. Then we walk folks through like what the actual experience is like, what they might expect, and the kinds of changes we see, what that transformation looks like, what they can hope for, what they can dare to hope for in EMDR treatment. And then we talk about, how do you find an EMDR therapist and what you're looking for, and how EMDR can be used as an adjunct therapy. Many people continue with their primary therapist, but bring EMDR into their game plan. People will use EMDR with other body-based therapies. So we talk a bit about that. And then we provide a whole bunch of resources and all at the back of the book. And I just wanted to mention too that we have a website that is the name of the book, everymemorydeservesrespect.com. and the name of the book, if it's not obvious in looking at the cover of the book, stands for EMDR. Every memory deserves respect, right? EMDR. And the name, Every Memory Deserves Respect, is about the idea that you don't want to push away what has happened to you. You don't want to dismiss what has happened to you, because no matter how big or small, if it felt meaningful, if it felt difficult, if you feel like you haven't quite gotten over something that happened 20 years ago, 40 years ago, last year, yesterday, let's go find that memory and let's have a sense of respect that it can still be taking its toll and we can address it and we can help you heal, right?
Well, thanks again, Debbie. It was really interesting and quite moving too. So I really appreciate you spending time with me today.
Well, thanks so much for your interest, and thanks for the opportunity to talk with people about EMDR.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. I hope you got chills from listening to the success stories, just like I did. My takeaways from this conversation are that EMDR is not actually magic, but it's based on science, and it can help your brain heal from past experiences. Also, just about everyone would probably benefit from EMDR. Those who have had acute traumatic experiences, those who have had adverse experiences that are still impacting them somehow, and those who aren't sure what's wrong, but know they could probably feel better than they do. Please reach out or check the show notes for the EMDRIA link if you think help if you need help finding someone to learn more about how EMDR might be able to help you. Listening to this podcast is a great place to start, and finding help from a trained EMDR professional is the most important next step. As always, if you have questions or topic suggestions, you can reach out to me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with you there. It helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple and Spotify, or even better, leave a written review on Apple so more people can find us. You can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Our producer and editor is Sean Potts. Our content marketer is Justice Abbott. And many, many thanks to Dr. Deborah Korn for joining me on this wonderful conversation, and to Michael Delman for connecting us. Thanks for listening.